Dear one, the world is waiting for the sunrise. Every rose is covered with you.
Joyous music for you this morning. It's The World is Waiting for the Sunrise, as performed by Les Paul and his then-wife, Mary Ford, live on The Ed Sullivan Show way back in 1951. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Larry Mueller today. He returns tomorrow for Garden Talk. But on our show today, you're going to be hearing more music by Les Paul as we talk about his life, his legend, and his legacy. Our guest, Sue Baker. She's the program director at the Les Paul Foundation. And as we talk with Sue, we want you to be a part of our conversation. Who are your favorite guitar players? And perhaps, arguably, Sue would be able to find a connection from them all the way back to Les Paul. Or do you have questions about the music industry and how Les Paul played a central role in it and continues to do so in many ways today? Join our conversation about this Wisconsin legend, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email anytime, talk@WPR.org. And Sue Baker, welcome to the Larry Mueller Show.
Well, thank you, Lee. It's good to be here.
So for those who are perhaps not guitar players, or for those who are not recording artists, how would you explain who Les Paul is and what his revolutionary understanding of music means to our sound that we hear today?
Well, probably the lead guitarist that most of us know would be the best affirmation of what Les did. As you had mentioned early on, he not only is known for his relationship to the Gibson Les Paul guitar, but he also revolutionized recording, and that is the key piece for musicians. I mean, Les did things like, well, his most important might be sound on sound, which is layering, and you heard Mary in the song that you played at the beginning, where it sounds like there's several women singing, but it's actually Mary, and it was a matter of Les recording her several different times and putting it all together.
Yeah, the advent of multi-track recording, which every musical artist uses to some degree today, and as music has moved from the music studio in many ways to the computers in our own bedroom, it's what people are using right now on their own Macs and laptops.
Absolutely, and that's thanks to Les Paul.
It's just amazing when you think about it, but that's just only one of the things he did. And I suppose I was not surprised, Sue Baker, to learn that Les Paul is the only person to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the National Inventors Hall of Fame.
And that pretty much, if you have to encapsulate who was Les Paul, that is probably the quickest way of saying it.
Yes, absolutely. So what is the role that Wisconsin plays in the development of Les Paul?
Well, he was born in Waukesha and grew up in Waukesha. And I got to know Les only the last 10 years of his life, and we became really good friends. And I will interject that he was a fantastic storyteller, and I was his sponge. I just took it all in. So Les said to me that the reason he is buried in Waukesha is because he said when he was growing up, the people of Waukesha, he said, they were always there for me. They were always supporting me. They encouraged me. He said, my teachers kept encouraging me too. And it was actually in Waukesha where Les started his inventions. He did his first invention, which is the flippable harmonica holder. In the 1920s, there were harmonica holders for musicians who wanted to play the harmonica and play a guitar as well, but they wouldn't flip, and Les wanted to play both sides. So he invented the flippable harmonica holder. It was very primitive, not, the sleek ones we see musicians using now, but his was the first flippable one. And he was all of 13. I mean, it's amazing.
13 years old, and he's starting with his first inventions, but he's also starting, and, I think he became best known as an incredible jazz guitarist, but he starts out as a country and Western musician.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. He was known, when he was growing up, he was known as Red Hot Red. And then when he was an older teen and started touring the country, he was known as Rhubarb Red, and those are all funny stories as to how he got those names. And it was only when he was in Chicago in his 20s, jazz was a big thing in the south side of Chicago. Les was working at WGN Radio and WBBM, and then at night he would go down to the south side of Chicago and learn from all the jazz greats. So that's where he picked it up. And of course, that was his signature sound, is jazz and his twist on it, the popular tunes that he did.
Sue Baker, our guest, she is the program director at the Les Paul Foundation, looking at the life and legacy of Les Paul from Waukesha. And if you have questions about Les Paul's life or how his legacy continues today, you can join us at 800-642-1234 or talk at WPR.org. So Les Paul was not his real name, Sue. where did Les Paul come from among all his other AKAs? And who did what was his name for real?
Well, his real name, and this, everyone will understand why he changed it, was Lester Polsvis. And yeah, a little mouthful. There were three S's. It's P-O-L-S-F-U-S-S. Well, the funny story about his last name is his mother hated all those S's. So by the time Les was even in elementary school, she had informally dropped that last S. And then she dropped the middle S, and there is a hilarious TV segment of Les being on a talk show in the 50s, and he's explaining how his mother kept changing his last name, and he said, at the rate she's going, my last name's going to be...
Well, we settled on Les Paul.
So Les, he was a comedian. He actually... studied under Jackie Gleason for a while. He thought that maybe he'd give up music and just be a comedian.
I never thought of Les Paul as a funny guy or as a, you know, as you knew him, Sue, as a great storyteller.
Oh, he was. In fact, at the Iridium Jazz Club in New York, and that's where Les performed every Monday night up until 3 months before he died. But, I'm sorry, 2 months. But at any rate, he would... If someone would come up on stage, and he often invited people up on stage, and if they started telling jokes, he usually would say, hey, I'll do the funny stuff.
And as you mentioned, he was active late into his life, and I believe he even earned a couple of Grammys at the age of 90.
Yes. Yes, he did. And that was for a recording that a whole, well, not an album, but a, you know, it was a CD, but he recorded with many of the top known musicians of the day. And yeah, he got Grammys for those.
So that was way back in 2006. When did the Les Paul Foundation get established, Sue?
Well, Les actually quietly established it quite a few decades ago. But I remember talking to him about it and asking him, and he said, well, you know, it's designed to stay dormant until I pass. So Les took his entire estate and put it into the foundation.
Wow. I didn't know that.
And I had a wonderful conversation with him and said, Les, tell me your vision. What do you want done with your foundation? And he said to me, well, you know about my childhood more than most people. And he said, you know, I had a hard time. I want you to find kids who really would like to play the guitar, but they're in compromised financial situations. He said, you take my money and you help those kids. You get guitars to them. You get music lessons to them. And that's what we do today.
You mentioned earlier that he gave a lot of credit to Waukesha for supporting him and getting his start in music. But then you also talk about how when he started this foundation, he references some of the hard times he had as a child to break through musically. What were those hard times?
Well, Les was the second child of his parents, but his parents were divorced by the time he was five. And so he was being raised by a single mom. His dad still lived in Waukesha, but his parents really, really didn't get along. And his so it was difficult for Les to be able to spend time with his dad. Although, if you knew Les, you would know that he would make find a way to spend time with his dad. But his mom didn't have much money. You know, think about it. This was back in the 1920s. People didn't get divorced. And so here was this young kid going to school, and his parents were divorced. And his dad was a bit of a carouser, a gambler, a womanizer. and that had a reflect on Les. I can only imagine that he got teased in school.
Yeah.
And his mom had to be economically aggressive. So she actually was running a cab company, a taxi company. In the 1920s, what woman does that stuff, you know? and she was very outspoken. She believed in communism.
Whoa.
She went to communist meetings in Waukesha. So he had a different childhood than a lot of people.
According to the Wikipedia page for Les Paul, his mom was related to the founders of Blatt's Brewing.
Yes, that's correct.
Wow.
And the Stutz Automobile Company. Her last name was Stutz.
How did Les then end up picking up the guitar?
Well, he started with the piano.
Okay.
And he went to lessons, and there's a story, and Les had shared this with me, that he said, I thought I was playing really well. And he said, one day my piano teacher pinned a note to my shirt and sent me home. And he said, I was sure that note was going to tell my mom what a great job I was doing with the piano, because he said, I could play anything. And so he got home, and his mother unpinned the note from his shirt and read it.
No.
And immediately tore it up.
Oh.
And Les said, what? And she said, don't listen to your teacher. She thinks you can't play piano. You're going to be great, Les.
Oh.
Yeah. So then his brother had, I think it was a trombone. He didn't like that. And his mother kept saying, that's no good, Les, because you got to be able to talk to the audience. You can't have any instrument that's around your mouth. She was the real, you know,
wow,
Hollywood mom, if you would.
Yeah.
Back in the 20s, she was pushing Les all the time. So he tried several things, and then he had a newspaper route and saved up his money and got what he called his cheapy guitar and started playing that. And he tells a funny story that he had just, it was, of course, mail order. You know, Sears used to be the Amazon of the 20s and 50s.
So this was a Sears Roebuck guitar.
Yes. Real inexpensive,
$5
or something like that.
Nylon
so
strings and, yeah.
Yep. He talked about how he opened the box, and as he opened the box, his finger accidentally hit one of the strings. And from the kitchen, his mother yells out, she always called him Lester. Lester, you sound great already. Yeah, she was the ultimate supportive woman. And in fact, Les always said there were two women that were most important in his life. The first one was his mother, and the second was Mary.
Mary Ford, his wife, who you heard at the outset of the start of our conversation from the Ed Sullivan Show. Sue, I just think you're so very fortunate to have been able to know Les Paul, to be able to just be in the room with Les Paul, let alone become to some degree his confidant, and then to take over this foundation. It feels like a humbling responsibility. What does the relationship between Les Paul and the foundation and its work today mean to you?
Well, I think I need to clarify. I don't run the foundation. I'm just the
program director. I apologize.
We do have a small organization, a tightly committed group of people, and then we have other people that help us. But basically, we're living out what Les had directed us to do. We're sharing his legacy as a way to inspire other people. I mean, and Les and I had several conversations about this, that in most people, and I would dare to say everybody, there's that scared little insecure child in each of us. Hmm. You know, as adults, we put on this self-confident front, but deep inside, there's that scared little kid.
I have no idea what you're talking about. None.
Oh, yeah, right. So, and you know, when you really get to know people, and I don't care how famous or important they are, it's still there. Mm. And led by example, he went through so many challenges throughout his life, and yet he kept going, and he kept going, no matter how big the challenge was. And that's what's so important, is to empower everybody around us so that they can all become the best that they're capable of becoming. And that's the guiding light for us within the foundation.
Sue Baker is the program director at the Les Paul Foundation. We're taking a look at the life of Les Paul and how that legacy continues today, in part through the foundation and in part through the music and the recordings that you listen to each and every day, including right here on WPR. We invite you to share your stories of your favorite guitarists, or if you've ever owned a Les Paul guitar of your own, or two or maybe three, tell us about it. 800-642-1234. What is it that makes a Gibson Les Paul guitar so cherished? 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. Our conversation with Sue Baker continues here on The Larry Mueller Show on WPR News. Coming up after noon today, we'll hear how an Eagles cover band from Wisconsin is replicating the band experience without you having to go all the way to Las Vegas to have it. Then we'll also get a glimpse into the songwriting process of folk singer Lou Ray from Eau Claire. But right now, our conversation is with Sue Baker, the program director at the Les Paul Foundation. And if you have a question about Les Paul, there is nobody better to ask than our guest. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email talk@WPR.org. And Sue, I want to ask you about going back to some of the inventions as he is developing as a guitarist. And it's 1940, way back in 1940, when he first builds the log. What was the log?
Well, we have to go back further than that. Oh. We actually have to go back to Waukesha to the 1930s, where Les was performing as he was getting paid tips at a barbecue stand. And when he was playing his little acoustic cheapy guitar, he didn't like how the box part of the guitar vibrated. He said, "I want to hear just the strings and nothing else." I'm going to shorten the story because it gets kind of long, but He wanted to find the most dense material he could find. And he said, "You know what? It was a piece of railroad, the rail, yeah. Not the track, but the steel." And he lived, fortunately for him, across the street from a railroad track. So he said to me, "So I got my buddies and we borrowed a wagon." And by that time I knew Les well enough. And I said, "Les, you borrowed the wagon?" And he said, "Well, I returned it. Does that count?" So he borrowed the wagon. He had his six friends go down, and it's a very steep embankment to the Fox River where the train track was. And they underneath the bridge, there were pieces of rail that the railroad company would come by, and they'd check the rail. And if there was a flaw, they'd cut it out and throw it under the bridge. And he said, "I got my buddies," and they picked up a 2-foot piece of rail, and they put it in the wagon, and they took it up the embankment and took it over to my house. And I said, "Whoa, Les. Wait a minute, your idea, your buddies, the wagon, where are you in all of this?" And he said, "Well, somebody had to manage it." So he takes a piece of rail and he puts a guitar string over the top of it. And he puts a spike from the railroad underneath the string to hold it up. And he puts a magnet underneath and speaker from his mother's candlestick telephone. And he said he plucked a string, and he said it was just the sound I wanted to hear. He said it had the sustain. It was a crisp sound, and nothing else was vibrating. He said that had so much sustain, you could go out and get a sandwich and come back, and it'd still be going.
Which, now, I mean, that did not happen prior to what was this rail guitar that he'd built.
Yeah, that was where it started. And for all the listeners in Wisconsin, all of us are so lucky because you can go to Milwaukee's Discovery World and there is a recreation of the rail, and it's in a acrylic box, but there's a hole where you can stick your finger in there and pluck that string and listen to the sustain.
I had no idea that was there. Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. And that was done under Les's guidance. So Les did that, and that was in the 30s. And then he started his career, and he, you know, moved all over and did all kinds of things. And then in New York in the 1940s, for that 10-year stretch, he had been thinking about that wonderful sound on the rail.
Mm-hmm.
And so on Sundays, he convinced the Evinrude factory to let him use their tools and you know, experiment in their factory on Sundays. And that is where he created the law. He knew the rail was too heavy to be practical, so he took the 4x4 and strung it the same way. But he was a little more sophisticated by that time. He said he took the rail, now I'm sorry, the log, and if you know what the log looks like, think about just this 4x4 strung with guitar strings and just that. So he took that to a club and he played it and he said, "Oh, it sounded so wonderful." But he said the audience was neutral. They didn't respond. And he said, I could not figure out why they weren't hearing what I was hearing. And so he went back to the Evinrude factory, and he took an old acoustic guitar. He sawed it in half, and he put what he called the wings on each side of his log so that it looked a little bit more like a guitar.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, you start to see the beginnings of the Les Paul guitar that we all know, that guitarists all know today.
Absolutely. So we took the log with the wings back to the same club, played the same song, and he said people went wild. And he said, "What's that instrument? That is so cool. The sound is so great." And Les said, "That's when I realized people hear with their eyes."
Huh. Wow.
Yeah. And it took him another 10 years to convince Gibson to build the Les Paul solid body electric guitar. So there is persistence for you.
Sue Baker is the program director of the Les Paul Foundation, taking a look at his life and legacy today along with you. Go to your questions now and your experiences. If you've ever met Les Paul or have a Les Paul story to share or a Les Paul guitar of your own, 800-642-1234 or talk at WPR.org. Audrey and Madison, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello. This is a wonderful story. My husband and I, he was a guitarist. He had a Les Paul guitar, which now our grandson in California has, very proudly.
Yeah.
But we heard Les Paul play at the Iridium. And my husband went up and talked to him. And they kind of shared Wisconsin tales, whatever. And he was so warm. And we met his son. And it was just a fabulous experience.
Oh, that is wonderful, Audrey. Did you have a question for Sue Baker about Les?
No. Oh, I did. Did he play by ear?
Thank you for the story, Audrey, and the question. Sue, how did Les Paul learn music?
Well, like I had said earlier, he did take piano lessons, but for the most part, he never learned to read music. He did play by ear.
Well, that's considering how intricate his playing became, pointed solos, guitar solos, it's almost incredible to think that was all by his ear, especially when you tell us the story about how he learned the hard way that we hear by sight.
Yep.
Molly in La Crosse, we'll go to you next. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. So my story begins back in 2008, I think it was, where I was in a book signing line to meet Les Paul and have him sign one of his books that he, you know, obviously published. And so he wasn't signing any memorabilia or anything like that, no other, like, guitars or anything. So it's my turn in line. I asked Paul, I'm like, "Hey, Les Paul, can you sign my arm?" And he was like, "I don't think so." You know, he was 90-something years old, and he's like, "No, you know." And I'm like, "Please, Les." And I had a tattoo. I have a tattoo of a woman playing a guitar, Les Paul guitar.
Oh.
And I said, "Les, this is your girl. Les, you've got to sign my arm. Please, Les Paul, sign my arm. Please, please." And so he did. He finally caved in and signed my arm after much waiting, you know. And so immediately after that, I ran to my tattoo shop and I sat for hours. My tattoo shop guy was like, "Don't you have anything to do today?" I'm like, "Not today," because it was summer and it was starting to wear off. And I'm like, "I can't lose this tattoo." Like, I can't lose this marker before it's tattooed. So the next day I had tickets to see him at, I think it was at the Pabst Theater. Mm-hmm. And so I was in the way nosebleeds, and I'm just like enjoying the show, uh-huh. a bunch of celebrities. It's his birthday bash. And so I'm at the bar getting a drink, and someone's like, "Oh, that's really cool. You should get that tattoo, that signature." And I said, "Well, actually it is. I went yesterday." And they're like, "Oh, that's so cool." So at the end of the show, I'm heading out, and one of the security guards grabs my attention and was like, "You need to come with me." And I'm like, uh-oh,
what did I do?
What did I do? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm like, okay, so I go with him. I'm scared. And I'm like, what did I do wrong? And he escorts me into a room with everybody with VIP badges on.
Oh, wow.
And there I am, like, no VIP badge, just this young woman, you know. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? And I see Les Paul sitting at a table. They wheel out a birthday cake, and we all start singing "Happy Birthday" to Les Paul. So there I am, joining the crowd, miss nobody, in the middle of an audience with Les Paul on his what would be his last birthday, I believe.
Oh, Molly, that is amazing, and I do believe you have a backstage pass tattooed on your arm now for good.
Right? That's so awesome. When he passed, I hate to say it, but my friend was like, "Your arm just went up in value."
Molly, what a wonderful story, and thank you so much for calling in and sharing that. Sue, were you perhaps around for that birthday celebration?
Yes, I was. And she described it very well. It was a wonderful celebration, and she was right. It was at the Pabst Theater, and they had the birthday cake. I mean, like I said, everything she said was spot on. I had a nice experience. My husband and I were at the book signing that preceded the big concert, and Les was thrilled to see us because by then I was a very good friend of his, and he enjoyed spending time with my husband, who was the techie guy. And Les decided that at the Pabst Theater, he wanted to have the stage set like a club, and so he instructed that there be high top tables.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was told that my husband and I were to be on stage with Les. So, yes, I was there.
Oh, wow. Molly, thank you so much for the call. And Sue, an amazing experience. Let's go next to Joellen in Eau Claire. And I am curious to know, Joellen, would you be interested in selling?
Oh, well, I can't compete with that story. But I will say we had people interested in this guitar.
You have a Les Paul guitar?
Yes, and my mom had bought it for my dad's 40th birthday in 69 and surprised him with it, and that resulted in a bunch of guys playing in our basement all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, once we had it evaluated, it's a TV model. I don't really know what that means, but it's a real gem, and people did try to offer to buy it, and of course, it's part of our family, and my daughter said there will be nobody buying this guitar.
Not for sale, but what kind of dollar figure were people figures were people throwing at you?
Well, I think we had it evaluated in Waukesha or someplace in the Midwest. I grew up in Milwaukee, and we just started getting contacts from China asking if it was for sale. So I don't know what the figure is, but we have it hidden away until people pull it out to play. They did say it should be played.
So then you can understand my opening question to you, and I understand your answer completely. But it becomes like a treasure. It becomes a jewel passed on from generation to generation because it is so priceless.
Absolutely. And just one quick note, Les Paul was about to appear in Waukesha years ago, and we had decided we'll take the guitar down and see if he would sign it.
Yeah.
And we didn't make it down in time, and he passed away within a week, I think. So we were sorry that we never got his signature.
Yeah. Well, you've got the guitar, Joellen, and if you're ever interested in selling it, you know you can look me up. But thank you for the story. Sue Baker, what is it that makes a Les Paul guitar a Les Paul guitar?
I'm really probably not the person to ask that question because I am not a techie person. I
I know Les's story, but I don't know all the technical stuff, and I'm not a guitar player, strange as that may seem. So
well,
that might be a bit out of my wheelhouse, but I do want to tie into something that she said earlier, and that was about a TV guitar. And I don't know for sure, but here's a piece of trivia that probably a lot of people don't know. We all are aware of TV reality shows, but do you know who did the first one?
No
way. Les Paul and Mary Ford.
What, the Les Paul and Mary Ford reality show? Like Big Brother?
Well, it was called the Les Paul and Mary Ford Show at Home, and it was in the 1920s, sponsored by Listerine. And there's clips on our website of it. And, I mean, they're wonderful. They're old black and white. It's from the 1950s. And, you know, anyone who knows about the 50s knows that the stereotypical view of husband and wife. And there's times where, you know, Mary's in the kitchen and saying, Les, I'm going to make some blueberry muffins. Let's sing a song. And then they break into the song. And the songs are wonderful. The storylines are just, you know, sort of typical 1952. You know, one of them's Mary's reading a book, and Les has cut out the last pages because she always cheated and read the last page of the book before finishing it. I mean, they're just wonderfully, wonderfully entertaining. But and there's so much people can learn about Les and listen to his music on the website, which is les-paul.com.
Les-paul.com, also a link up at wpr.org/Larry, but les-paul.com for the foundation and the videos you'll find with Les Paul and his then wife, Mary Ford. Was the Les Paul guitar a hit out of the box when Gibson released their first Les Paul guitars? How did they go over?
They were a hit. It was really good.
And so when did that first Gibson Les Paul come out? It was the early 50s?
Yes, 1952. That's the inaugural Gibson Les Paul solid body electric guitar.
The solid body electric guitar. And how has this guitar evolved or stayed the same over its iterations and over the decades, Sue?
Well, it's changed, you know, with styles and coloring. And at one point, Gibson changed it, and again, I'm not the guitar person,
right.
So I'm a little bit out of my wheelhouse, but they put, like, two horns on it, and Les did not like that, and so he insisted that Gibson change it back to the design Les liked.
When did you talk about it musically, like he's playing professionally during the day, he's learning jazz at night. When did he become the inventor? When did he get back to inventing these musical effects and recording techniques?
That happened. The recording techniques happened in his Hollywood garage. Les lived in Hollywood. Let me back up and give you kind of a timeline. He was born in Waukesha, and when he was 17, he got an offer to do a radio job in St. Louis. And keep in mind, this is in the middle of the Great Depression, and you know, people are in soup lines and all that other stuff. He gets offered for a solid job in St. Louis. He goes there. That radio station goes under. He goes to Springfield, Missouri, and then he gets a job offer in Chicago. So of course, he goes to Chicago. And he's performing there. He goes to New York, where he's playing with the Fred Waring Orchestra, which is another whole story. We don't have enough even years to talk about all this. But so he's in New York. And then Bing Crosby is the big guy. You know, he's all over the movie.
Sure.
He's singing. He has his radio show. And Les decides, I want to be like Bing Crosby, so I'm going to Hollywood. And that is why he moved to Hollywood, was to meet Bing Crosby. And again, that's another fun story, but I'm going to gloss over that so I can get to answer your question. So he goes to Hollywood, and he starts traveling with the Andrews sisters. And he's playing in Chicago, and his mom comes down from Waukesha to listen to Les. And she says to Les, oh, I heard you last night on the radio, Les. And Les said, Ma, you couldn't have heard me because I've been on stage with the Andrews sisters all the time. I'm not on the radio. And she said, huh, then you better figure out how to sound different than all those other people that are playing electric guitar. He quit his stint with the Andrews sisters.
Oh, wow.
Went back to Hollywood, locked himself in his garage, which he's already by that time turned into a recording studio, and starts experimenting. And it takes him 2 years. And that's when he comes up with overdubbing and phase shifting and all these other techniques that makes him sound so unique. And he introduces it with the song called Lover.
Lover. Actually, we have a little bit of Lover that we can play right now. Let's hear that. What? Whoa, Sue Baker, what is going on there? That is intense.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
And like all of the recording people and all of the musicians were reacting just the way you did. What is that? How did he do that? And it's all on his guitar. He did all kinds of things, and he recorded by, recording at normal speed and then playing back twice as fast.
Yes.
And he did all these maneuvers in his studio to get that very unique sound.
That is amazing. What were who were Les Paul's musical influences, Sue?
Well, Bing Crosby, because Bing knew how to market himself.
Interesting.
Django Reinhardt, who was a gypsy in France, and very well known by guitar players, was huge. Les was influenced by a lot of people. He was a very eager learner, and it wasn't just guitars and music. I remember distinctly one time when he came to the Waukesha County Historical Society and Museum when I was working there. And I was a director at that time, and I took him around showing and explaining things to him, and I took him into the research center where all the records are organized and easily accessible. And he said, Les Paul, at this time, and he's in his 90s, said to the archivist, I have a lot of papers in my house. Can you tell me how to organize them? The poor archivist. Eyes were as big as saucers, and he had a panic look on his face. And I said, Les, the archivist has a master's degree in library science. He can't tell you in a half an hour how to do all of that.
Some idea of how much there was in Les Paul's, to organize from Les Paul. Our guest, Sue Baker, is the program director at the Les Paul Foundation, and we invite you to this conversation about this Wisconsin legend. 800-642-1234. If you met the man or have stories about your favorite guitar player, we can tie it back to Les Paul, his creations, inventions, and revolutionary sound. 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. Our conversation with Sue Baker continues here on WPR News.
Haven't felt like this, my dear, since I can't remember when. It's been a long, long time. You'll never know how many dreams.
That's Bing Crosby and Les Paul. You hear it there on The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today. He returns tomorrow for Garden Talk. Mark Dwyer will also be back to help care for our delicate plants as our winter arrives. And we'll talk about the best composting tomorrow, starting at 11 here on WPR News. Now, our guest, Sue Baker, the program director of the Les Paul Foundation, and we've taken a look at the life of Les Paul, but let's look at the legacy through this foundation, Sue Baker, and what the foundation is doing today. What kind of work do you do, and what kind of grants do you provide?
I would say that there's two main things. We have a comprehensive website, which I mentioned before, the les-paul.com, where people can find all kinds of things about Les, explore his inventions, listen to his music, great education page for a resource for teachers, but actually for anybody. There's fun things there. We try to make all the education very fun.
And your advisory board is a who's who of guitar players, by the way. That is amazing.
Yes, it is, indeed. The other thing is, and you mentioned the grants, we give grants to nonprofit organizations across the United States with a focus on helping people that are in economically compromised situations. And we have two deadlines. One is January 15th and the other is September 15th. And the form that people need to fill out is on our website under grants. And I think it's pretty straightforward. And it's a relatively easy application as long as people really answer all the questions.
And I also understand that the foundation is interested in focusing on hearing loss research.
Yes. Left head tinnitus, you know, the ringing in your ears, which anybody who has it really can drive you crazy.
Yep.
And most musicians have it because it's often caused by an exposure to noises that are too loud, as in loud music.
So, well, you can tell how long somebody's been on the radio by how loud their headphones are, Sue. So it's quite common in this business, too. And I think, yeah, to some degree, people can relate. And I find the research fascinating, and I think it would be very important.
We decided to really focus, to pinpoint our interest. And so we have been regularly, every year, we fund research for the cure, and we go through the Hearing Health Foundation because we know that in the Les Paul Foundation, we might be experts on Les Paul, but not on, on hearing research. So we work closely with them. And, you know, as with any research, you know, you keep trying and prying and you get little steps, but it's nothing that can happen quickly, but it's still there.
Granted.
I wanted to tie back into, you played Bing Crosby's song.
Yeah.
Bing Crosby had a little finger in, if you will, the sound-on-sound invention.
Really?
Because back during World War II, when the U.S. Armed Forces came back to the U.S. after the war, they brought back the reel-to-reel tape recorders that the Germans had invented. Because before that, in the U.S., we only had wire recorders. And Les knew that by that time he was good friends with Bing. He knew that Bing really didn't want to be in the studio doing his radio show. Bing wanted to be out on the golf course beating Bob Hope. So Les told Bing about this invention of the reel-to-reel tape recorder and said to Bing, this is something I think you'd really be interested in. Well, by that time, Bing had a lot of money, so Bing invested in Ampex, which, of course, created the first reel-to-reel tape recorders in the U.S., and as a gift to Bing, a gift from Bing to Les, he gave Les one of the first tape recorders.
Wow.
And then Les added another head to the tape recorder, and that was sound on sound.
All of a sudden, you're recording over yourself as many times as you like, and you can speed up the tape if you like or slow it down. And all of a sudden, the studio becomes magic, not this sterile room where whatever is captured is somehow replayed, but actually something that you can create sounds that you didn't even know existed, which he did by inventing sound effects that people still use today in music every day, like the flange.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
We got a couple other questions here as we're running out of time, and I apologize, Sue, because we could do all day about Les Paul, but let's go to Matt in Sauk City. Matt in Sauk City. Good morning.
Hey there.
Hi.
My question was about pickups.
Yeah.
I was wondering how much Les did with guitar pickups. You know, did he try making his own? Did he try making different variations of them? I was just curious about that.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Interesting. Go ahead, Sue.
Absolutely. In fact, Les's son, Gene, talks about how that his dad would say, hey, I want you to do some more pickups. Go down in the basement and wind up some more pickups for me and make them this way or do this way. And so he was always having new pickups constantly.
And he's got his kid making them for him in the basement?
Yep.
And
Gene would have been in his teens when that happened, because by that time Gene was playing drums and actually was touring with Les and Mary. They went all over Germany at the time.
Yeah, and is the Paul family still involved in the foundation's work, Sue?
Not directly. Les had five kids. Russ, whose legal name was Les Paul Jr., and here's a funny bit of trivia, Les never legally changed his name. So the real Les Paul was Les's oldest son. And he was called Rusty, and Russ has passed. Gene Paul is the second son, and I certainly have become friends with Gene, as has everybody in the Les Paul Foundation. And he helps us out. He gives us information and vice versa. And then there is, Les and Mary had a baby girl who died, which Les had said was the worst day of his life. And then they adopted a girl, and her name is Colleen, and she is alive and lives in California, and we get along great with her, too, and she likes what we are doing. And then, as often happens, right after Les and Mary adopted Colleen, surprise, Mary got pregnant, and so there's Bobby. There's a fun piece of trivia that I wanted to share with your listeners, and that is, I think most people know what the Capitol Record building in Hollywood looks like.
Yep, the round one?
But I bet you didn't know is that Les designed the echo chambers that are used today that are underneath the parking lot at that building.
What are the echo chambers below the Capitol Records building in Hollywood?
Yeah. They're used for recording.
Oh.
They're used today for recording. When an artist wants to have an echo effect, they use the echo chambers that Les Paul designed in 1952.
Wow.
And it was interesting because someone had said that to me, and I was putting together the information on Les's inventions and innovations, and I wanted to make really, really sure that before I said it, that I knew it was accurate. And so I started calling people at Capitol Records and Hollywood, Hollywood Architectural Organization. And what I was connected, and this is amazing, I connected with the designer of that building. And I thought, my gosh,
Wow. The
man must be 150 years old. he was an intern when he designed that building. And he said to me, not only did Les design the echo chambers, he designed the original recording studios at Capitol Records.
Unbelievable. That is some trivia, because I had no idea. I don't know where else that would be written or documented. That's amazing.
On our website.
Les-Paul.com. And our last minute, Sue Baker, how does Waukesha remember its own Les Paul?
We have the Les Paul Parkway that encircles Waukesha. There's a Les Paul Middle School. There's a Les Paul Performance Center. Gibson gifted 10-foot guitars that are painted and all over the city. Yep, Les is everywhere.
Sue Baker, it has been a pleasure to be able to hear some of the stories, some of your experiences, and the life of Les Paul. The fact that he is the only person inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the National Inventors Hall of Fame, and that he came from right here in our own backyard. I can't thank you enough, Sue, for the work you're doing at the foundation and sharing it with us today. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Sue Baker is the program director at the Les Paul Foundation. And coming up after the news, we're going to hear how a Wisconsin-based Eagles cover band is replicating the band's experience. Now, if you wanted to see the Eagles today, you'd have to go all the way to Las Vegas. You'd be paying hundreds of dollars for the privilege. And or perhaps maybe you could just go to Lake Geneva and pay a fraction of the cost. That's next after the news here on The Larry Miller Show. I'm in for Larry today. He returns tomorrow on Garden Talk right here on WPR News.
Vaya con Dios, my love. Wherever you may be, I'll be beside you. Although you're many million dreams.